He was the ultimate family man, always there for his daughter's soccer games and to sing her to sleep. But his little secret was that he was also one of the most wanted bank robbers of all time. This is the story of Thomas Randall, the suburban dad who was wanted by the FBI for over 50 years. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here, and hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. Thomas Randall had to tell his wife and daughter now, or he'd take his secret to the grave. An aggressive form of lung cancer had caught up with him at age 71, and the outlook wasn't good. One day in March 2021, as they were watching an episode of NCIS, he told them the thing that he'd been keeping from them and everyone for more than 50 years. Nowadays, Thomas was such the suburban dad. He was living in Lynnfield, Massachusetts, half an hour north of Boston, with his wife and daughter. He was a golf pro and then a car salesman for a living, but you could always find him at his daughter's soccer games, dropping her off at school and volunteering to go on her classroom trips. He was always the one to put her to bed, which he would do while singing the lullaby he wrote for her. He was a big fan of crime shows and the type of guy who donated to law enforcement charities, which is a little funny because Thomas's big secret was that he'd been evading the police since the year 1969. On July 11th, 1969, he went to work at Society National Bank in Cleveland, Ohio. Thomas was a teller there and he had just turned 20 years old, so he celebrated by walking into the vault and stuffing $215,000 into a paper bag. That's about $1.7 million today, and one of the biggest bank robberies in Cleveland's history. He made a show of bringing a paper bag with whiskey and cigarettes with him into the vault after lunch, so no one would think it was weird when he left with the paper bag later. He just switched out the contents.
On a summer day in 1969, a handsome 20-year-old man walked out of this bank, and he had with him nearly $250,000. And then he vanished. Officials described him as an all-American boy, an ideal employee, a bank manager's dream.
It was a Friday, and no one noticed the missing cash until the next Monday when Thomas didn't come to work for the first time in 7 months. By then, he was long gone. The only clues to his whereabouts were a call he made to his girlfriend to tell her he was going to a rock concert in Pennsylvania, and then letters he sent to her from D.C. and L.A. There were also reported sightings in California, Hawaii, Texas, and Oregon.
The next possible clue as to his whereabouts, and I give a lot of substance to it, comes from a retired Beechwood, Ohio couple who were vacationing in Honolulu, Hawaii during the fall of 1969. A young man approached the retired man and engaged him in about a 15-minute conversation. Ted seemed to like the man and offered to buy him a drink inside the Princess Kealani Hotel. And it just so happened that the Beechwood man mentioned that they were from Cleveland, Ohio. And with that, the young man made a lot of excuses for, I better split now. The offer for the drink ceased.
When the retired man got home, he recognized a picture of Ted in the paper and said, "That's the guy I met in Honolulu." He called the FBI and told his story. But by the time the lead was checked out, Conrad had disappeared, this time for good.
Ted was on America's Most Wanted and Unsolved Mysteries, and the files on his case eventually filled 20 binders. Friends in Ohio told investigators that he wasn't fingerprinted for his job at the bank and therefore boasted about how he could pull off a heist like the one in the movie The Thomas Crown Affair. They said the 1968 Steve McQueen version was his favorite film and that he was obsessed with watching it before his robbery. It's set in Boston, the city Ted moved to in the year after the heist. And when he changed his name to avoid being caught, he chose the name Thomas Randall, likely because of the main character of the movie, Thomas Crown, the millionaire businessman who robs a bank for fun to show how smart he is. Ted Conrad slash Thomas Randall also liked to show how smart he was. Thomas Randall was born Theodore John Conrad on July 10, 1949, to parents Edward and Ruth Beth. He spent his early years in Denver, but when his parents divorced, he and his sister went with their mom and her new husband to Ohio. He was on the student council and in German club in high school. Classmates called him quiet, but articulate and goal-oriented. One classmate said that when he graduated, he wanted to accomplish things. He supposedly had an IQ of 135 and would sometimes just do things just to prove how clever he was. He went to New England College, where his dad was a professor, for one semester before moving back to Ohio for community college. He started working at the bank while going to school and was such a model employee that they put him in the vault, packaging the cash that would be sent around town to the different bank branches.
Teddy Conrad's plan was very simple. At lunch hour that day, he would leave and walk one block south to this spot here on St. Clair in Cleveland. And he would go to a liquor store, which was here 17 years ago. And he bought himself a bottle of Canadian Club, which, of course, was wrapped in a brown paper bag. At quitting time that day, he told his partner inside the vault that it was okay to go ahead and leave, that he would be along in a couple of minutes. Alone, Teddy allegedly put $215,000 in the bottom of the bag, put the liquor bottle on top, left the vault, chatted to the guard, and walked out. He hopped on a bus to Lakewood, got off at his Clifton Boulevard apartment, and went inside to pack.
He married his wife in 1982, and they had the one daughter together. By that time, the money was gone, and to this day, no one knows what happened to it. He worked as the golf pro at the Pembroke Country Club and played pro golf in the winter. People said that he was the kind of guy who never cheated at the game. When he retired from golf, he decided to use his love of cars to become a luxury automotive salesman. He loved cooking shows and trying out his latest recipe on his family. His daughter says that they never lived a fancy life, that she marveled at friends who had luxuries like an ice maker in the door of their fridge. Her family was driving around in used cars and had to file for bankruptcy in 2014 due to $160,000 in credit card debt. 7 years later, Thomas made his confession to his family. At first, knowing what a fan of dad jokes he was, his daughter thought he was kidding.
My mom, dad, and I were sitting in the living room watching NCIS, and he looked over at us and really calmly said, "Ladies, just in case anything ever comes up, I had to change my name when I moved here. The authorities are probably still looking for me. I don't want to talk about it, but just so you know, in case it ever comes up, you're not blindsided." And then we went back to NCIS.
The next day, Thomas only agreed to tell his daughter his real name if she promised not to look him up, but she couldn't help herself. And there were hundreds of articles about him. She thought to herself, "Oh my gosh, my life is a Lifetime movie." She thought of her dad as a calm, nonchalant guy, not someone who was looking over his shoulder. But it suddenly made sense why her dad always had a beard and always wore a baseball cap outside of the house. He favored dark sunglasses and wouldn't talk much about his childhood. It also made sense why he absolutely refused to travel internationally, even when his daughter begged him to chaperone her school trip. He said he didn't care for overseas travel, but of course, he didn't have a valid passport. He wouldn't do one of those mail-in DNA tests when his daughter wanted to, saying it was weird for some company to have your DNA. She found out after his death that he was secretly fluent in French, which was wild to her, a person who had needed help with her French homework as a kid. It reminds me so much of another case I covered of a man living under a false identity, William Leslie Arnold. He had played the saxophone all throughout his young adulthood, but stopped when he escaped from prison and began a new life. When his son later took up the sax, Leslie picked it up one day and surprised everyone by seemingly being a prodigy. His son was actually mad at him for being so good when he'd supposedly never played before. And that was the only time he ever played it again. Anyway, just an interesting parallel to show you what you have to give up when you try to start a new life. Thomas Randall's daughter said she chose not to be angry with her dad in the moment because she just wanted to hear his story while he was still alive. But of course, things still bothered her. Like, she had told her dad that she wouldn't change her name when she got married so his legacy could live on. How could he have let her say that when he knew the name meant nothing? It's so interesting that there used to be a time in the U.S. where starting over with a new identity was so easy. I mean, sure, Ted Conrad could never get a passport as Thomas Randall, but lots of people had no trouble getting a new Social Security number. Back in the day, especially if you got a copy of a dead person's birth certificate, you could just say that you never got a Social Security number, and the Social Security office would grant you a new one. The Social Security office didn't have access to a database of people's personal information to scour. So that's probably how Ted Conrad / Thomas Randall had such an easy time waltzing into a Social Security office in January 1970 and asking for a new number under his new name. Lots of people waited to get their Social Security numbers until they were adults, so the office wouldn't have verified anything. These days, everyone gets a Social Security number at birth if their parents want to claim them on their taxes, and the government is going to really investigate anyone who says they never got one. It's kind of exciting to think about all the people who might have gotten away with shady things because of the lax security, but I'm glad they fixed it. Thomas Randall / Ted Conrad died in May 2021, just 2 months after he let his daughter in on his secret. She and her mom decided that they would take a year to come to terms with this information and then tell the police. But that same year, U.S. Marshals came knocking. It turns out that Thomas's death had tipped someone off. This person sent his obituary to an Ohio crime reporter with a note. They noticed that Thomas Randall's birthday was the same as Ted Conrad's, just 2 years apart. Thomas Randall's parents had the same name as Ted Conrad's parents, just with Randall added to the end. When I looked up his parents' names, I was like, oh yeah, that would tip someone off if they remembered Ted Conrad. His mom's name was Ruthabeth Kruger, like Elizabeth, but not. So not what I would call a common name. The obituary and the note ended up in the hands of U.S. Marshals. Investigators found a 2014 bankruptcy filing from Thomas Randall that had the same handwriting as Ted Conrad's 1967 application to New England College. They spoke to U.S. Marshal Pete Elliott, whose father had been one of the marshals who searched for Ted Conrad for decades before he died in 2020. His dad had cataloged fingerprints from documents Conrad had touched, tapped Ted's family's phones, and showed up at Conrad's high school reunions in the hope he'd be there, to no avail.
Each fresh contact with the volumes of evidence might lead the FBI to Conrad, and all the twists and turns the case has taken have captivated a succession of agents.
I think one prominent thing about his character and likes was that he was a sports car enthusiast, loved Porsche automobiles.
Conrad's love of sports cars and racing is what the FBI calls life pattern activities, things that people do throughout life, often without being aware that they have set lifelong patterns. They know Conrad was a golfer and a billiard player, and that he was left-handed. Wanted flyers were placed in magazines that cater to those sports, and surveillance is sometimes put in place when the FBI gets tips from the public. Even Steve McQueen was contacted in case Conrad should try to see him at a race. But Teddy did not surface.
I'm sure Pete Elliott was relieved to finally have this case solved for the sake of his dad, who had been working it since 1969. But he was also mad. Mad about the wasted time and all of the family events his dad missed for work. Mad about the stolen money that was so much more than his dad made as a marshal. And mad that people saw Ted Conrad as some sort of hero. But I would hardly call a guy who completely ghosted his entire family back in Ohio a hero. They must have all thought he was dead.
Well, really, I got to give credit to my father. My father passed away in March of 2020. He worked on this investigation since 1969. He was a career deputy U.S. Marshal. You know, we grew up near where Conrad lived. Conrad and my father had the same doctor, and Conrad used to work at a local ice cream shop where my dad used to take us as kids. So this was personal for my father.
Pete Elliott was the one to knock on the Randall door that day in 2021. He said, "I think you know why we're here." But they just wanted information, not to arrest Thomas's family. In the aftermath of the U.S. Marshal's announcement and the press getting hold of the story, Thomas Randall's daughter said she grew tired of reading about her dad as this kid who loved fast cars, pretty women, and living the high life as some Thomas Crown wannabe. She says she wasn't exactly emotionally ready to tell her story, but she wanted people to know the amazing dad, husband, and friend she knew. She says that his family life wasn't great when he robbed the bank, and the money was a way for him to escape that. Maybe she means he had problems with his stepdad or his two stepbrothers, but I'm not sure. Obviously, it's no excuse either way, but it's interesting to hear how he might have rationalized it in his mind at the time. And of course, we become different people from young adulthood to age 71. I'm sure he really was the loving father his daughter remembers him as. You can hear more about Thomas Randall from her point of view on her podcast, Smokescreen, My Fugitive Dad. Back in December 1969, a federal grand jury indicted Conrad for embezzling and falsifying bank records. He would have served about 10 years for each charge. Conrad wrote in a letter to his girlfriend at the time of the robbery that he planned to come back home in 7 years once the statute of limitations ran out. He said, "Maybe on that 7th year, we'll meet and fall in love. It's now 7 days and only 6 years, 358 days to go." But because he was indicted, the clock stopped on the statute. Maybe he would have made a different decision if he'd known that he could never go home again. Those charges against him have now been dropped, and his family from Ohio is just happy to finally know what happened to him. U.S. Marshal Pete Elliott said, "Conrad was quiet. He was friendly and he was well known in the community. He just wasn't who he said he was. I hope my father is resting a little easier today, knowing his investigation brought closure to this decades-long mystery. Everything in real life doesn't always end up like in the movies." But my feeling is, for Thomas Randall, it kind of did. He spent the money, he got the girl, and he got to ride off into the sunset a free man. Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.